Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today is a very special show. It is all about mothers and the relationship they have with their children. An unknown author once said, "A mother's love is the fuel that enables a normal human being to do the impossible." And Lin Yuntang said, "Of all the rights of women, the greatest is to be a mother." These quotes best describe to me a mother's incredible love for her children and what a wonderful gift they give to their children in being their number one cheerleader. And when times get tough, a mother's love and belief in her children can give them a confidence that they can do anything, and even if the world says can't, they have their mother beside them all the way. This love and belief is especially evident for moms who cared for children with disabilities. Moms, from the moment their children get diagnosed with a disability, they work endlessly to provide the best life for their child while carrying on their duties, even caring for other siblings. But how do these mothers cope with the diagnosis of a disability for their children? What information did they tap into so that they could move forward with the responsibility of being a caretaker? We have Kathleen McCallan, a mother of a 13-year-old son with autism, and we have Carrie Fletcher, a mother of two children with Fragile X and autism. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good to see you. Thank you so much for doing this. Carrie, let's start with you a little bit. You have two children with Fragile X syndrome, and you were diagnosed in 2004.
Yes.
They were diagnosed at the same time.
Yes.
In 2004.
Yes.
So as a mother, for you, what did that feel like? Did it feel like your world was kind of crumbling under you?
You know, it didn't. At the time, it really didn't. The best part about it was that we knew we had an answer as to why we had delays, but we had been dealing with the delays for a few years at that point. So getting a diagnosis was just the cherry on top, mm-hmm. you know, just to know which direction to go from that point on. So obviously my husband and I had to go through a little bit of a mourning stage. We,
sure.
you know, talked about what our retirement might look like. Mm-hmm. And this was before we knew of all the opportunities they were going to have in their right. adulthood. So our outlook has changed a lot since mm-hmm. they were diagnosed in 2004.
You said you had been to the family meeting on April 12th, and you had said that you were kind of on the lower end of dealing with this disability for your children. Do you look to a future as a mother as they grow?
Yes. Obviously, we set their IEPs up at school to kind of direct them that way to the life skills and the academic parts that are going to be really important in their lives as they grow. I think we've kind of looked at it from every stage. You know, I don't know if they'll get jobs. I think they will, but we have to also plan for them not having jobs or not being able to live independently. They are going to live with us, or they're going to live together. What's that going to look like? Are they going to live with us? Are they going to live in a different town? Are they going to live in the same town? Not sure what that's going to look like, but we try to look at it from every angle and just hope that it works out the best case scenario, that they're going to live independently and they're both going to have jobs.
Kathleen, let's talk about Scott. He is 13 years old.
He's 13, and he's actually the youngest of three.
Okay.
We have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old daughter, two okay. daughters that are neurotypical. So okay. Scott's our last.
Yeah. And honestly, as a mother, it's got to be hard on you because you're thinking when you get pregnant with a baby, oh my mm-hmm. goodness, you know, I'm entering a new chapter and things are going to be fine, 10 fingers, 10 toes.
Right.
When he got diagnosed, what'd that feel like?
That's a funny thing about autism. I just imagine if you had a child with Down syndrome, you know right away, right?
Mm-hmm.
With autism, and in fact, when I was pregnant, had some testing done because there were some concerns and they ruled out Downs and all sorts. And so we thought, you know, and really had never thought very much about disabilities and things that could go wrong. You're just doing your thing. But so he's born and we're thinking he's a healthy little kid and all of that. And then around a year or so, started noticing some delays, and then a year and a half, noticing more delays. And then 2 years, you know, he was officially diagnosed at 2.5.
Okay.
And it's funny, even at that time when you get the diagnosis, and I completely agree with you, you know, you know that there's something not quite right, and you're searching and searching, and then you get that diagnosis and you're thinking, okay, we're not crazy. This is real.
Sure.
And so now, and my husband and I are both very practical people, and so, you know, it's like, okay, now we have something to work with. But even that, even 10 or 11 years ago in the field of autism, was so much cloudier than it is now. Mm-hmm. It's still cloudy, but we've made so many strides even in the last 10 years with autism. And at the time of diagnosis, I remember people, you know, sort of stepping forward and saying, I kind of wondered, and I always thought, and you know, but nobody said anything.
Yeah.
And
is that frustrating?
It's frustrating, but I mean, I respect that. You know, I mean, I've had that same experience with other people's kids, where you're going, you know. And I don't know if this is true or not, but my husband and I joke about the fact, I think when you're in the world of autism, and then you go to a Chuck E. Cheese or go to a you know, park or whatever, and you can sort of scan, and you can almost pick them out.
Right.
Do you agree, Carrie?
Do you?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to be careful, because, you know, sometimes I probably, you know, you have those rose-colored glasses on, or those glasses on, and so you see everything through that. In fact, my girls tease me sometimes. I'll say something about, I think, you know, they may have some special needs or something. And they say, Mom, you think that about it, you know. That's just the way you look at the world.
Yes.
You know, when you're sort of, that is your world.
Right.
So, but at the time of diagnosis, you know, it was finally, okay, we have something to work with. And we were in first steps by that time. And then looking ahead to starting school, he started on his third birthday. This little tiny kid getting on a big school bus. And he's been in public school and special needs classes, life skills class ever since. But I also echo with Carrie in terms of just the there's like a grieving and a depression and all of that, but that honestly, I had no idea that was going on in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I don't know the best way to say it, maybe it was kind of just this heaviness and this funk and this, you know, just a lot of uncertainty and all of that kind of thing. And it wasn't until about 2 years later. So I'm feeling all of that, and in my typical fashion, just sort of plowing through and getting things done and doing what you have to do.
Right.
We were at a camp a couple years after that, after Scott's diagnosis, and I met this wonderful young woman who has cerebral palsy, and we were talking, and she said, you know, that's really common. And I said, it is. And I was thinking, and she gave me some resources to that end, and I said, no one has ever, like, come alongside of me and said, okay, here's where you're at.
Right.
This is normal. This is, you know what? And I read the poem about going to Holland when you think you're going to Italy, or, you know, whatever that is. But for somebody to say it so clearly like that, it's just like, okay, this is part of the process.
Yes.
And to sort of give permission to feel that way, and the grief, and it really is a grief of a loss of what you think is going to be. And then over the course of years, thankfully, it's just an acceptance and a love of, you wouldn't have it any other way.
Mm.
But I will tell you, that doesn't just happen like, whoops, you know, overnight. There's a lot of processing and all sorts that you have to go through as a mom, as a wife, as a husband and a wife, as a family, about, it looks different than you thought it was going to look.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get to a point, thankfully, hopefully most people get to this point, where you say it's a huge blessing.
Yes.
But we also tease about the fact that Scott is a huge blessing, but he's a high maintenance blessing. And because
I love that,
because there are things that are so different, that if he were a typical 13-year-old, our life would be really very different in many, many ways. So, yeah, just kind of coming to grips with all of that.
And Carrie, it's funny, because you were, in the YouTube video that I researched for you, you said one of the things you did was you sat down when people would tell you information and drank it in. And Kathleen was just saying that, you know, taking in that information, accepting the fact that now you have different challenges than you ever thought could ever imagined, because you just don't ever think about that. So how important is drinking in that information? Because it's such a fresh diagnosis when you get, I mean, you're kind of blank, aren't you?
Well, we were really fortunate One of the things that the genetic counselor told me the day that she told me on the phone that my children had Fragile X was, do not get on the internet and start looking stuff up because you're going to see good and bad. Well, it is what it is, right? There's good and bad with every diagnosis. The very first website that I went to was the National Fragile X Foundation, and God blessed us so much. This was a February, and in June they were having an International Fragile X Conference in Washington, D.C.
Wow. Hello. Like,
thank you.
Yes.
My husband and I were signed up to go that day. And so my moment of clarity in my acceptance of the mourning of the loss of what my expectations were, where when we walked into that room with all those other parents, because these were the first people I'd ever met, and it was a room full of them. Mm. Plus, there were researchers and doctors and people that their life was devoted to Fragile X.
Yeah.
And so I kind of knew everything was going to be okay. You know, we're not alone. Yeah. Not alone in this. So,
I mean, obviously, you are both, Kathleen, you're in the medical field yourself. Mm-hmm. Carrie, you talk to parents about different disabilities and that it'll be okay, and you tell your stories. That's great. But when it hits home, you know, it doesn't matter what career you have. When it's your child sitting in front of you, that's got to be a different feeling.
It is, and I think part of it is how people react to when they're under that kind of stress. For me, I have a tendency to shut down. So, and emotionally, and just like there's so much information coming at you, it's just like, and my husband is so much better about, I mean, he will dig. I just don't do that. When I shut down, I shut down. So it was a funny time in terms of in those earlier years, in terms of, you know, having to dig because, you know, all you're hearing is early intervention, and you could cure your kid. And I quote unquote, mm-hmm. you could cure your kid. So literally for the first, say, 6 or 7 years of Scott's life, or I should say after his diagnosis, about 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. There's this just like scurry of activity to try to cure this kid. Okay. So you're looking at biomedical, you're looking at all the therapies, and the poor kid was going to, you know, Riley 4 times a week for this therapy, that, mm-hmm. I mean, and I remember one time when he was about 7 years old, and I literally just had a meltdown in the kitchen.
Sure.
And I said, I can't do this anymore. And it was the day, the clarity that came that said, this is not my goal to cure this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And just the acceptance, that was kind of a different level of acceptance and all of that. And I'm not saying we still do some biomedical things and we still do some therapies and all that kind of thing. But, you know, when you're getting the message of early intervention, you know, and cure, and I just see families with young kids going through this now, and it's such a hard time. And then coupled with the fact that there's very few people who are sensitive to the fact of the grieving and what I mentioned mm-hmm. before, those are really tough times. So the last five to six years, I've gotten to a better place in terms of managing Scott and his needs and what that means and sort of all of that future stuff and figuring that out. And then also trying to, even in the last couple of years, combining that with my work experience and my circles of influence there, and trying to say, okay, how do I bring that into the healthcare field? And have been able to do some things with even within my organization to say, okay, you can start to see more of a purpose. Every day you start to see more of a reason and a purpose and a connection for all of this. But quite honestly, as a working mom, and I'd worked pretty much full time through most of that time, my employer was gracious to allow me to have some time off for a while to be part time to try to quote unquote cure Scott. You know, in those earlier days, I was so busy. It's almost like a working mom with young kids where you're trying to, you know, be the mom and do all of that, but also in the work life, you're careful not to bring too much of that to work either. Mm-hmm. And in the last couple of years, I've gotten much more comfortable with just saying, this is who I am, this is part of whatever, and there's benefit to that experience that I've had in my personal life, in my work life. So, I don't know, it just feels like it's pieces are even in the last couple of years, still kind of coming together, and again, just being able to see the blessing and all of that.
As you went through the diagnosis and the whole emotional healing of yourself and the emotional healing of Scott eventually, did that change your view of the healthcare system?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because, being an insider to it, I think that there are some things that we do really wonderfully, you know, in terms of just services and the providers and so many of the caretakers and the direct therapists and people that I work with in my work setting. But oh my gosh, it's so fragmented, and it's for family. It's just, and I'm an insider, and it's still so confusing. One of my frustrations, I think, that has grown over the years is that there's really not a medical specialty, and I'm just speaking from the autism, mm-hmm. I don't know Fragile X mm-hmm. or some of the other disabilities, that really has, there's not a medical specialty that has embraced autism. You know, so you literally get, I think there are wonderful doctors who are trying to do their piece of the puzzle, but there's not, and there's only a few primary care doctors that really get this. And thankfully, we do have some wonderful ones in our city, and hopefully that's growing. But you just, I think the more that I've experienced on a personal level and more that I've connected on a professional level, you realize it's so fragmented. And it's, and so many of the things that families with autism do, again, just speaking from autism, are not medically based. And I'm not at all opposed to things that are alternative and all that kind of thing. But quite honestly, there are things that families are doing with their kids that could be detrimental to their child's health. Because there are, you know, because some of those things are not supervised by a physician or a medical team. And so my hope and my goal in bringing this together is that we can draw the medical profession closer to us and have them take more ownership for it in that coordinated fashion. Because I think there's a lot to do with that.
Oh, parents are going to be so happy to have this show. I'm so happy to do this. We've been talking about acceptance, too. You know, your children are not going to get over their disabilities. Mm-hmm. They're always going to be looming. How do you get to that acceptance, especially with the person with the disability, about, you know, your children when they grow up? How do you get to that acceptance?
You mean accepting of your children?
Accepting of maybe the of disability? Your children and of the disability too.
Well, they're your children. I mean, if the disability stands in your way, then I don't think you're meant to be a mother. No, and that might be a little extreme, but it's your child. No matter what. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I can't imagine not being accepting of my own child.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? If somebody else isn't going to be accepting of my child, then they're missing out on a lot.
Yes.
How do you get across to someone who maybe is new to the disability field, that if you look beyond the disability, you'll see the kid, you know, you'll see the brilliance in them. As a child.
I think that's especially hard. Most of our relatives are out of town. You know, it's hard enough maintaining relationships with cousins and family and all of that, you know, when you're spread all over. The sadness to me is that it takes extra time, and it takes something in a person to want it. Scott is not an easy person to get to know. I mean, he's hard for us. I mean, you have to get in his face, you have to just be there, and he's nonverbal and, you know, pretty significantly affected by his autism. So when you have a relative come in for the weekend, it's really hard for them to connect.
Especially
really
when they're
is.
Not around.
They're not around, they're not used to him, you know, and all of that. So, and to be very fair, until 13 years ago, I'd really never been around people with disabilities. Okay. There's no one in my family. Sure. I'd never really done any volunteer work or anything like that.
So was that a scary thing? To deal with the fact that you have to jump through loopholes to get his life how he how he wants it?
Yeah, but I think to Carrie's point, he's first and foremost my son.
Yeah.
And I remember really early, maybe it was even right around diagnosis, I said something to somebody at church, and something about he's autistic. And I know that there's differing views about the phraseology that we use even in the disability community and stuff. And I said something along the line, you know, he's autistic. And she said, no, he's a boy with autism. And to me, that's really stuck. And again, I know there's differing views with that, but to me, that's really stuck. First and foremost, he's my son, our son, and who happens to have autism. Just like if my daughter happened to have diabetes, and they've got their own issues too. I mean, you know, we all do.
Sure, yeah.
We all do, whether they're medical or, you know, other kinds of, you know, issues and such. But I think the reason I bring up the family thing and just others, since it doesn't have to be necessarily long distance, because I think it's so much harder to get to know our kids, or again, speaking for Scott, it makes me sad because honestly, they're missing a lot. Mm. The people that have really made an effort to get to know him and get through that maybe discomfort with getting to know him and stuff are so blessed, you know? And so I guess that would be my word of encouragement is anybody who's not around that, just make that extra effort because it's you'll get more than you give.
How about you, Carrie?
You know what I love? I got an email this morning from Best Buddies.
Love Best Buddies.
It is. It's great. And I think that's a great way for the young people to get to know people with disabilities and to just realize that they're just like them with some extra special
challenges.
Unique qualities.
Yes.
Best Buddies of Indiana has just gotten a grant that is going to help them add 15 more schools in the next 2 years. And we registered back in the fall. So I am crossing my fingers that when the school year starts in the fall, that we will have a Best Buddies program.
Yay.
I think that's huge. I think that gets kids out in the community with typical peers. Mm-hmm. I think they're obviously the better role models at that age. So I'm very excited about that. That totally made my day this morning to know that it's going to happen. And thankfully, our sponsor of that had already kind of started his own little buddies group. And so every time Matthew's little buddy Mark sees him, hi, Matthew, you know, it's just such a wonderful way for these kids to accept. And I think, honestly, I think the parents are more accepting of our children if their kids are doing it. I think the parents are learning so much from their own kids.
I agree with that. And it's, to me, I actually interviewed Sarah from Best Buddies of Indiana. Honestly, that program is so amazing. And honestly, we could actually tell parents to go to Best Buddies too. But the fact that high school students, elementary school students are accepting these children with disabilities, they look beyond the disability. How awesome is that? When you're talking to new parents that have just gotten diagnosed, that are going, oh my goodness, you know, and you feel that because you felt it. What is your word of advice for them?
There's a man at my husband's work, and they've been recently diagnosed. We're meeting with them next Monday night, in fact, to talk with them. And we've met with families over the years and such, that it's not the end of the world. In fact, in many ways, it's the beginning of a new world. I mean, there really is a lot of hope. And to be fair and to be practical with that, again, with what Carrie said, we're not sure if Scott's going to be able to, you know, be employed or ever live independently. So who knows what that looks like and how that affects, you know, your marriage and your life and all of that kind of thing. But there's so much hope and there's so much blessing to it. So, but you know, they are literally right in the sort of the firing squad or, you know, whatever analogy, you know, the valley, they're in the valley at that stage. So if you can help point them and say, you know what, out of the valley, there's hope and all of that, but it is tough. I wish that, you know, to the earlier points and your question just now, I wish we could do more for recently diagnosed families and such. And I just think that, if that woman that had come alongside me 2 years after, if that would have happened even earlier. And even still, I met her. I mean, we were out of town at a camp. And so I didn't have ongoing contact with her. But she got it. I mean, she obviously got it. And it would be nice to be able to put some supports in place for the younger families that they continue. And our experience, we would go to, you know, one place you try to find that is like parent groups, support groups and things like that. Our experience with that wasn't so hot. I mean, we met some wonderful people and families and stuff, but oftentimes they turned into kind of groaning sessions. Mm-hmm. And we would come away from that more discouraged. And I said to my husband after one of them, I was like, I need a place of hope. And we are very, you know, we're very firm in our faith, and our church family has been very important to us. And we know that God's hand is on all of this and God has a plan for all of this. And so we're confident in all of that. On the other hand, sometimes just on a practical day-to-day human, you know, experience of that, there's doubt, there's despair, there's, you know, all sorts of things. So to have more of support, I think, would be a wonderful thing.
And more support, honestly, I liked the fact that you said that sometimes it can turn into groaning sessions, these parent support groups. And we're not bashing parent support groups, but you need positive talk.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
When you're looking at it, it's negative all over. Yeah. And if you don't get something positive in there, I want to ask this last question to you. You had talked about how faith plays a role. What does faith do for the both of you as far as looking at the positive side of your children, Carrie?
I know I shouldn't, but I do. I question God. Why me? Why did you, or not in a negative way, but you really have that much confidence in me to raise your children? And obviously he does, because he gave them to me, and he gave me my oldest son, Jake, who's been an amazing role model for them as well. And we're lucky in our church as well that we do have a special needs ministry, although they integrate the kids into their typical age-appropriate Sunday school classes. But thankfully, our church has a connection in Nicaragua. So over the last 5 or 6 years, they've been working down in Managua with special needs kids and getting them out of the dark and into the schools. And it brings me so much hope. And I hope that kind of love can be apparent in this country as well.
The two of you, Kathleen and Carrie, thank you so much. And thank you so much for sharing your stories. And I'm so happy to call both of you friends of mine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Well, let me leave you with something. Never underestimate the value of your mother. Never underestimate her love. Never underestimate her counsel, because it's always there when you need it. Thank you to my own mother, who enables a normal human being like me to do the impossible. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye.